House Judiciary Committee is in session. It's 5 minutes after one. In attendance is our Representative Holmes, Representative Dahlstrom, Representative Ramirez, Representative Coghill, Representative Gruenberg was in and out of the room. His things are here. Excused absences for Representative Lynn and Representative Samuels. We have three bills before us today. I have a bill up in finance. I've been requested to attend because I haven't been very good at being in front of the committee, and I want to make sure that I pay them deference. Representative Coghill has a bill in finance behind me. I have a note in front of me that I need to find out if we're going to have a quorum on Monday the 24th, which is not this Monday, but a week from the following Monday. That's the Monday after Easter, I think. Is that right? Is the 24th the Monday after Easter? Is Easter the 23rd?
I will not be here.
Not be here. No, no.
I will, but
Representative Coghill
be lonely, it looks like.
Okay, so we just need to make an inquiry about Representative Gruenberg and make a determination of whether we can conduct any business. So one, two, and all right. Okay, we have three bills before us, one from Representative Coghill, one from Representative Fairclough, who asked, she's in a speaking engagement, she asked if she could go second, and Representative Boog, welcome to the Judiciary Committee. We're happy to be meeting at 1 o'clock in the afternoon, and we're happy to have you to come before us. This is House Bill 278, Version E. Representative Dahlstrom, would you adopt the working document?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would move the CS for House Bill number 278-25-LS1104-E.
Thank you. Representative Boog, we're so happy to have you here. I see you brought one of your fine aides.
I did. Chair Ramirez and members of the Judiciary, I really appreciate you, your attendance and your stealth work duties today. Before you is a single-line bill. I will not say that it's simple. I will not say that I don't need your help, and I will appreciate your support and your help in working on this document. This bill, House Bill 278, requires that sex offenders register their email addresses and their online identifiers. This is a common-sense bill that keeps Alaska laws up to date with technology. Right now, sex offenders have a way into our homes through our computers. And since Alaska has the highest per capita use of the internet, this means a lot of our kids are at risk. This bill will give police officers an additional tool to catch and punish sex offenders who may be talking to our kids online. Information collected under this law would allow parents to find out if their children are talking to sex offenders online. So it provides a tool to parents as well. The bill will help bring Alaska into compliance with the federal Adam Walsh Act. 9 other states have enacted similar legislation. We do have professionals online and in the room if questions come up. And with that, I will entertain any questions that the chair or others of the committee have.
Thank you, Representative Boog. Let me make the committee aware of who we have available to assist us. We have Jan Rutherdale is here with the Department of Law, available for questions. Jan? Not here? Oh, okay. And then Peyton Meredith with the Fairbanks Police Department is here, or is available telephonically. Would like to testify, and so would Sergeant Ron Tidler of the Anchorage Police Department. I have a question for the bill sponsor. Anybody else?
I will in a little bit on some of the language.
Representative Boog, here's my concern. In these issues, it's always you have to be so delicate in the way that you frame the question. I made in the longer session last year, I made 17 trips back to Fairbanks, and the only time that I didn't go to Fairbanks for a weekend was the weekend I went to Little Rock, Arkansas with Senator Bundy, and we attended a sex offender conference, and I came back and reported to this committee and handed out big, thick binders on many, many aspects and dynamics of the conversation. And one of the things that was arose as a concern, so I want to frame the question properly, is oftentimes sex offenders are pretty normal, except for this huge, enormously gaping character flaw. And this character flaw changes the trajectory of their lives, and they end up, nobody wants a registered sex offender living in their neighborhood. And so as a result, their ability to try and normalize an existence becomes disturbed. And I think on this committee, those of you that have a BlackBerry device and then travel, and you try to be in a place where your BlackBerry works, or you're like, geez, I couldn't read the email because I kind of miss having my computer. I mean, we're high-functioning, presumably high-functioning adults here at this table, and we see our patterns disturbed when we move around on a scheduled trip. I remember Jane, who does such excellent work for our office in this committee, sent me a copy of oil and gas, a bill we were going to do on the Nenana Basin when I was traveling a couple of weeks ago, and I couldn't access the document on my BlackBerry. And I was trying, and I was frustrated. And so the concern I have is whether we're going to take somebody who, because of their behavior, has departed from the trajectory of a high-functioning lifestyle, a normal lifestyle, and then are we asking them to do something which is to reconnect with the world that would be difficult for a high-functioning member of community to do once they were disturbed from their regular communication devices? Does it make sense the way I'm trying to frame the question?
Not exactly to me. I'm trying to figure out where it is that you're going, Mr. Chairman.
Page 3, lines 16 through 19. How about there?
Okay. When I first was introduced to this bill and talked to the AG, to Talas Kohlberg, we were discussing the fact that the AGs from 20-some states were concerned, and they had a coalition to put together language that would work in all of the states and that would help the public, and it wouldn't create an ability, number one, for sex offenders to get online and use it as a chat room or identifier for themselves. And in answering your question, This acts to protect them as well as to protect children and to inform parents and police of activities. So what we're trying to do in this language is that when they register their emails, then it goes into there are people who do this for a living and they're online who have ready access to whether or not they're conforming to this law. And if they're not conforming to this law, then now we have ramifications for that. Prior to this, we didn't. So in this language, what we're trying to do is to bring these people into compliance with normal activities. So we're trying to help them. And we're trying to protect them at the same time. Help, because what we will do in this law, it answers a yes or no, whether or not these... Yes.
Excuse me. What's the penalty if you don't...
Muted.
What's the penalty if you don't, by the next day, notify the department in writing of the
unmuted
of the changed or new address or identifier?
It's a Class A misdemeanor, and it's subject to a year in jail and a minimum of 35 days in jail.
So a significant portion of sex offenders are probably on some probationary status. So I can't begin to convey to you how difficult it is for sex offenders to find a place to live, because there, my recollection is pretty good. You're nodding your head, Representative Grunberg. Mm-hmm. Believe me, I don't want to give any quarter to sex offenders. I'm not interested in that. But
you speak for me, too.
Right. And me as well. I appreciate where you're going.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I was concerned about a one working day. That's not enough time.
Because were any of us traveling on a holiday, you know, on a vacation or on a business trip to D.C. for Energy Council, and we were required to conform to a standard as rigid as this, I wonder that members of this body wouldn't be subject to a Class A misdemeanor in trying to reconnect with the right authority. And if they're already on a probationary status, not only now are they in violation of their probation, but they are also subject to a Class A misdemeanor. And we're not interested in allowing sex offenders to hide in the community. That is not that's not what my line of questioning is about. But
right.
My line of questioning is for those that are trying to abide by the rule of law and reemerge into society and conform to sex offender registry requirements. And I'm wondering if this is a too rigid standard.
Right. Well, to my knowledge, we changed the CS so that it would comply and mirror current law. So registration, as far as current law is concerned, from what I understand, is already in statute, and this mirrors that law.
Okay, excellent. That'd be a good question for Ms. Rutherdale.
Right.
Representative Grunberg.
I'm prepared to make an amendment of line 10, page 3, to change that to 5 days, and if the other law is too rigid, I think we should look at that too. That's just I think that's impossible, very difficult.
Let's ask Jan Rutherdale to come online and ask that question to her. Is Jan online? Is that right? Oh, well, she will be back. Oh, I see. She's not here yet.
She's here for 3:54. She's not here yet, but she'll be back for 3:54.
Different bill.
Different bill.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I'm sorry. She's down on the sheet for 278. That's why I understand what you're saying now. It says 278. Yeah. So we don't have anybody here.
We were hoping that the AG's office, Annie Carpinetti, was to be here today. I don't see her in presence.
Maybe we can get Jerry Luck up.
Okay. We do have a different representative we can bring forward and address that question.
Hi, Lauren.
Hi. For the record, my name is Lauren Rice, and I'm a legislative liaison to the Department of Public Safety. Currently, and we have Ms. Monfreda, she should be online, and she can answer the question in a little bit more detail, but currently we have a one-day turnaround, business day turnaround time okay. for physical address changes.
And how do you make a one-day turnaround for... But my concern is electronics. If that's the standard for reporting to your probation officer or reporting to whomever you do for a sex offender registry, I get that. But electronics mystify me. I mean, I have a hard time electronically reconnecting with the world. I'm not very skilled at it. And so we're asking somebody who's already dysfunctional. So how do you, if you don't own a computer and you live at 123 A Street and you move to 124 A Street, who do you notify and how do you notify them? Who do you notify of on the sex offender registry and how do you notify them?
Representative Ramirez, the sex offender would typically call the sex offender registry and let them know and then either fax or mail the change of address. And so I assume that they would go to Kinko's. Or they would mail it. They can mail it. As it needs to be postmarked within one business day of the change. And so if you move to a new physical address, but it's postmarked of the one next business day, then that's acceptable.
Okay. And then what is the requirement for an electronic... establishes or changes an electronic mail address or an IM address. So it is the same standard. So you'll notify the department in writing of the change or new address. So this is strictly if you're already using an email address and then you change the email address?
Chair Ramirez, that's correct.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Grimper?
Do we have any other witnesses, like anybody from OPA or Public Defender on the line?
No, we have we have Kathy Monfrida and David Shade from the Sex Offender Registry with Department of Public Safety. So maybe let's ask Kathy Monfrida. Kathy, are you there?
This is for the record, this is Kathy Monfrida. I'm the Chief of the Criminal Records and Identification Bureau for the Department of Public Safety. Part of my duties include the management of the Sex Offender Registry. And maybe you want to ask me again what the question particularly is?
As it relates to electronics, Lauren Rice, the legislative director for, or the legislative aide for public safety, has taken us through what the policy is if somebody physically moves addresses and their requirement to make a phone call to the sex offender to the sex offender registry and then to notify in writing one day. And so what we are dealing with is IM addresses, electronic mail addresses, and whether that is the same standard or a more rigid standard.
And if I might add,
Representative Grimberg,
whether a lot of people are getting prosecuted because they can't make that 24-hour deadline.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, we have not seen a problem with reporting those changes in a one-day period. I can add, in addition to Ms. Rice's testimony, that the other way of reporting this information is to show up in person either at the registry office here in Anchorage or a trooper post or a VPSO post, and that is typically the way offenders notify us of a change in address or employment or a variety of changes in their status. We anticipate that the adding the internet identifier would be simply changing the form to include space for them to report their email addresses and any internet identifiers, and then the changes would be conducted in the same way that they're currently doing residence changes now.
Representative Grimberg.
Thank you. Ms. Monk, do you see many people who submit these changes later than 24 hours?
Through the chair, that's a little bit difficult to identify. Speaking for Anchorage only, where we see the offenders here at the office, I think the ones that intend to be compliant really make an attempt to comply with the law and either show up here or mail us the form within the 24 hours. It's a business day, so it's a weekend. They're excused from that. I'm not sure out in more, other municipalities or remote locations. I don't believe, and probably the answer would be more for the Department of Law, or the question would be better addressed to the Department of Law as to whether or not they're actually charging people for failure to register for being late and reporting a change of address.
Yeah, follow up, Mr. Chair.
Yes, please.
Does the form require them to state the date they moved?
Through the chair, I don't believe so.
The reason I'm asking is because if they did require the date of the move, that might have Fifth Amendment self-incrimination implications. But if it doesn't have it on there, then you don't have that problem.
Through the chair, I'm looking at the form right now, and they sign the date that they report the information, but not the date of the change.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Ms. Monfrida, the Adam Walsh Act is 3 days to notice. Just a general question, why is the state of Alaska a one-day notice?
To through the chair, I don't know the exact answer to that. I know that it originally, I believe, was 5 business days, and that was then changed to 1. It was prior to my responsibility of managing the registry, but I recall what was happening is that it was really being pushed, and people weren't reporting at all, or, you know, so they narrowed it up. I know that in meetings that I've been at recently regarding the Adam Walsh Act and other issues related to reporting, that the federal definition of immediately has become 3 days, is what they're considering it for, reporting of sex offenders and missing persons as well.
Representative Grunberg?
I've asked my staff to get me that language. Do you have the language? Does anybody have the language, that phrase in the Adam Walsh Act, that you could read to us?
I don't have it in front of me. I can get it.
Do you remember, does it say they must report in 3 days or within 3 days? What I'm wondering is whether there would be a potential conflict if we only allowed them 1 day, or whether that's permissible. Is there a supremacy?
The Adam Walsh Act is a...
There's a reason why it's a girl boy.
Is she still there?
Do we lose her? Did we lose Kathy? Okay. So she'll call back in. So...
Mr. Chairman, if I might, to address your sure. your one of your concerns, if you're using a computer to change the address, you have the computer there. So certainly it wouldn't be as if you were traveling or whatever. So mm-hmm. if you change your address or you've changed your identifier, you have access to the means by which to correct it.
Good point.
Yeah, it's an excellent point. So why would somebody, other than to hide their identity, you know, from the presentation that we had a couple of weeks ago, if you had an email address, what purpose would you have for establishing a new email address? Representative Holmes?
Well, Mr. Chairman, when I took this job, I got a new email address. If somebody changes jobs, they automatically, in most cases, would get a new email address. Or, for instance, if they were to engage in a political campaign, they might need a new. There are reasons that are actually legitimate that they might have to do that.
Okay, so you have a registered sex offender who's holding down a white collar job, and they move from job A to job B, and they get a new professional address for the corporation that they work with, and so they would be required, when they took their new job, for instance, to register. Is it every additional address? How would it work? What if you had a personal email address, and then, as is the case with you, Representative Holmes, then you got another email address? How does it work if it's an additional electronic establishes or changes? So in this case, you would be establishing an additional electronic email address.
If I might, Mr. Chair, every email address must be registered.
Mr. Chairman, just on that point.
Representative Cockrell?
Page 3, line 4 and 5, sub I is each electronic mail address.
Okay.
Because I had the same question. I went up in there.
Okay. Did Ms. Manfreda get re-established with us? Okay. We'll wait for her to call in. Are there other questions for the sponsor? Otherwise, we'll go to Mr. Meredith or Sergeant Tiddler with Fairbanks Police and APD. Any questions?
Yeah.
Can we have Peyton Meredith with Fairbanks Police Department, please? Thank you, Representative Book. Thank you, Lauren.
Okay.
Thank you. Oh, Book, you stay there.
I wasn't going to keep her.
Yeah, you're on probation in this committee. She's in good shape. You've got problems. You're still working
She's
through
the
issues.
She's the spurt here.
Yeah. Do we have Mr. Meredith with us?
Yes, sir.
Hi, are you with FPD?
Yes, sir.
Officer Meredith, how's Fairbanks today?
Actually, it's cooled off a little bit. It's snowing, but the sun's starting to come out, so.
Good. Thank you for wearing the uniform and taking care of our community. I appreciate it. Would you introduce yourself and provide your testimony, please?
Yes, thank you, sir. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Detective Peyton Meredith. I'm a detective with the Fairbanks Police Department. The Fairbanks Police Department is also a member of the Alaska Internet Crimes Against Children Task Force. I'm calling today to speak in support of House Bill 278. My duties as a detective here at the Fairbanks Police Department with regards to this bill, I investigate generally possession of child pornography and distribution of child pornography cases within the Fairbanks city limits or within the Fairbanks area as a member of the Fairbanks Internet Crimes Against Children Task Force. The cases that we investigate when we deal with the possessions of child pornography and distribution cases are serious cases. If you've never been exposed to any type of actual child pornography or any distribution of child pornography, you really have a hard time kind of comprehending what we're talking about. But it is, of course, the most heinous things that you'll ever see in your life. One of the things that I think about is very important about this bill, as it pertains to my job at least, are a lot of the people that I end up investigating, end up arresting, and ultimately prosecuting for possessions of child pornography or distribution cases will end up being registered sex offenders. Generally, that's a condition that the district attorney's office imposes upon people who are convicted of those crimes as a member of usually plea deals or of convictions, that they have to register as a sex offender. If they have to provide these email identifiers and other computer identifier information, that would aid law enforcement greatly in our efforts to, I guess, catch them again if they get after it again. Which we all know that the recidivism rates for sex offenses are quite higher. They're no different for people involved in child pornography and pedophilia. The only thing that I thought of in the bill that perhaps detectives from the Anchorage Police Department could speak on further than I could, with just myself reading through it, when they were describing providing the email addresses and other computer identifiers, I don't know if we wanted to list in there specifically any exact internet protocol addresses or IP addresses that they were specifically assigned by a internet service provider. For instance, if I go down to GCI and I rent a cable modem from them, as many of us do, generally if you have a static cable modem like that, something that's always on, you never have to turn it off, you are provided a specific IP address or internet protocol address for basically for your computer for that modem. One of the ways that specifically people like detectives with Anchorage Police Department and people that are actually online and targeting people, the way that they catch them, distributing and trading child pornography and other sex-related acts for children, is by these IP addresses. And I don't do that. I usually do the possession cases kind of after the fact. However, that is something that they could speak on. But they target those IP addresses specifically, and they can link up with those IP addresses attached to certain computers. And if they knew those IP addresses in advance for people who have already done this before, that would aid them greatly. I know, and I don't do that specifically, but maybe that's something that one of them could speak on, and I know that Sergeant Tiddler's on the line there as well. Maybe he could. Let me see. I have some notes here. Excuse me.
It's okay. Well, we appreciate your testimony, Detective Meredith.
I guess some of the comments I heard while I was on hold before from the chair. And is that Mr. Ramirez is the chair?
Yeah. How's it going?
Okay. I recognize your voice. Some of the questions about people leaving state and things like that. In my experience, just being a police officer as long as I have, when I'm dealing with people that are on probation and they are registered sex offenders or whatnot, generally that's usually questions like that or something that they can work out before they ever leave with the probation officer or with DPS or DOC before they leave. And, of course, not all registered sex offenders are on probation. I mean, a lot of times sex offender registration goes on well beyond a period of probation, whether or not they have to be registered sex offenders for the rest of their life or just for just a number of years. So maybe I know that is something that people that are on probation, generally people that I've spoken with, just they work out those kind of issues before they leave with their probation officer. And as long as they communicate that with their probation officer and they're not they're not a real problem before that, there's generally stuff that they can work out. But in summary, the Fairbanks Police Department supports House Bill 278, and thank you very much for allowing me to speak on his behalf.
Thank you, Detective Meredith. Is there any questions? Okay, tell Chief Hoffman I said hello, please.
I will, sir.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. Have a good day.
We appreciate your help. Kathy Manfreda is back and available if members have any questions. And now we'll go to Sergeant Ron Tidler with Anchorage Police Department. Sergeant Tidler?
Hi there, Mr. Chairman.
Welcome.
And for the record, this is Detective Sergeant Ron Tidler, Anchorage Police Department, supervisor of the Cyber Crime Unit, and also the current commander of the Alaska Internet Crimes Against Children Task Force, a statewide task force dedicated to fighting this problem.
Do you have testimony to offer today, or are you just available for questions?
I'm available for questions. I do have the opportunity to have a computer up and running, and I was looking at the Adam Walsh Act. There was a question on what was the specific language, and looking under the subsections, it did say 3 working days for the reporting requirements. And I'd also like to state that on behalf of the Anchorage Police Department, we do support this bill as it is written.
Thank you. Are there questions for Sergeant Tidler? Representative Coghill?
I think going back down to the one-day notice, how would you anticipate enforcing that? I think we're going to have them send it in writing, and outside of doing Section 4, where they set up an identifier where they can do it electronically, that would be kind of a after-the-fact enforcement. Is that something that would be something that you would use as a way to contact people, or help me understand the enforcement process?
Not in the past, we've had the address registration on the sex offender registry problem where people were not reporting where they were living and moving, and I would only assume it would follow that type of enforcement. In the past, what we have done is we would formally charge people that were not current with their sex offender registry, and then as soon as they did become current, the charges would go away, is my understanding, or they would be dropped. And it's more in an effort to gain compliance with these people that are have the bad luck to be on this registry. It would be more, as far as locating these people, would either be referrals from the Department of Public Safety to us, or it could come in through as Crime Stopper tips or based on our own investigations. If we come into contact with a sex offender and we find out that, yeah, they do have internet addresses that they haven't been reporting, it's going to make it at least an ability for us to charge them with something while we're conducting an investigation into their activity.
I believe if your TAMS card expires, it's a Class A misdemeanor if it expires by one day.
I believe so, too. And in those cases, when we come into contact with those people, it's our normal procedure at that point is we issue them a citation, and then they make a 30-day court appearance on that. With sex offenders, I believe it's a little more stricter due to the nature of their felony crimes, where we will actually take them before a magistrate.
Well, I agree with you, Sergeant Tidler. A sex offender is entirely different than a one-day expiration on a TAMS card. I was just trying to draw that distinction. We're happy to recognize the Chairman of Community Regional Affairs in our committee, Representative Fairclough. We're very happy that you joined us. It's nice to see you. And we'll be taking up your bill next as per your request. All right, are there any other questions for Sergeant Tidler? We appreciate your testimony and you taking time out of your day, and we thank you for the very important business that you do, and I think the committee is especially sensitive after the presentation that we had from you and that special agent out of Wyoming.
Yeah, Flint Waters.
Unbelievable, and it's this is in the same way that eBay, brought on new electronic fencing of stolen goods. I think it caught many of the members of this committee. And put us on our heels to see how widespread and absolutely compromising this new area of predatorship or predation is on the internet. And we thank you for your work. And I recollect that Senator French and I were going to write a letter to the governor requesting that extra funds be allocated for the purposes of working on this kind of predation. So we thank you for being at the forefront of such an important piece of new defense for the public good, Sergeant Tidler. And we extend the same gratitude to Detective Meredith up in Fairbanks. Are there other questions? Annie Carbonetti is in the room. If anybody has a question for her.
Mr. Chairman, I think I do.
Representative Holmes?
And this is maybe for the bill sponsor. It might be better for Ms. Carbonetti. I'm looking at the words, and they appear several times throughout the bill, other internet communication identifier. And I know what an email address, what an electronic mail address is, and I know what an instant messaging address is. I'm just trying to get a handle on what other internet communication identifiers might be.
Through the chair, Representative Holmes, one of the concerns that was brought to me through the AG's office is that there are several communications mechanisms out there. And currently, one of them is used nationally by specifically kids, high school kids. And each one of them has a different moniker, if you will. And that's what they're calling an identifier. And so you can have several of those.
So, Mr. Chairman, if I may, that would be something like a Facebook name or a MySpace page name.
Correct.
But it would not pick up things such as your login for a bank account? Would other internet communication identifier pick up that sort of thing?
That would be a question for somebody who does this type of enforcement. I do not. I'm not an expert on that.
Okay. I don't know if we have anybody on here.
Representative Holmes?
Yep. Oh.
Yeah.
Sergeant Tidler, are you still with us?
Yeah, I am.
First, Representative Dahlstrom would like to. She was out of the room. She likes you.
I like Representative Dahlstrom myself too.
who could not?
Hi there. Thanks again for all you do.
Well, thank you.
Representative Holmes, do you have a question for the sergeant?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm just trying to get my head around what an other internet communication identifier would be. I understand it would be like a MySpace or a Friendster or one of those names, but I'm wondering whether it would also get logins that you would use for things like online shopping or to log into your bank account. I'm just curious as to whether those would be picked up under this bill.
Looking at that language in the statute here, I believe that that's to be the fact. And also, I like to think of it as preparing for the future, because you never know what the technology is going to change our internet identifiers to be. And that's my belief that that would cover that.
In other words, thank you, Mr. Chairman, that you would have to put your login for your bank account, your login for a login to do shopping on eBay, things like that.
To that specific one, I would think it's more wherever you are using to transmit information, and yeah, that might be a problem on that particular aspect.
Okay, interesting. Representative Dahl has joined us. It's a pleasure to see you, as it always is. Representative Dahlstrom?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I was out for 5 minutes, so I apologize. I'm going to make a statement, and I know it won't be popular with some people, but in my personal opinion, if anyone that needs to be concerned about registering on the sex offender list and has gotten themselves into that position, I don't believe that they have a right to or deserve the same, quote, freedoms as a law-abiding citizen. They have taken action. They have made choices themselves, but they can't pick the consequences. They can pick their choice, and they've done it. And now there are other things that they're going to have to follow through for the rest of their life because of those choices that they made. And so while I understand some of the implications of, you know, business and maybe timing and all that kind of stuff, I just really think that it's just a consequence that they, unfortunately for them, because of their bad choice, may have to live with for the rest of their life.
Yes, Representative Alston, but the only qualifier I would offer is I believe that there's a broad spectrum of things that you can do that cause you to be on the sex offender registry, and when we identify the worst side of the spectrum, or even three quarters of the side of the spectrum, we're also sweeping up the one quarter side that I'm aware of that is a different standard of misconduct that's not as heinous as what we all presume to be making somebody required to be on the sex offender registry. And so I'm just concerned about disturbing 100% of that list. When we're talking about, I think Representative Holmes' question, and then Representative Coghill has a follow-up on that, is passwords, access to bank accounts, this phrase internet communication identifier. Is that the nature of your question? Do I understand it correctly?
Right. Correct.
So I have one moment, Representative. Right. I have an email address, and then I want to go do internet banking, for instance, and whether that password or that access to Wells Fargo or Northrim Bank or whichever institution, then would that be considered an internet communication identifier? A follow-up on that point?
If I may clarify, Mr. Chairman, I don't believe that the passwords would be required, but, for instance, sometimes your logins are required to be your Social Security number or your bank account number or something like that. So I don't believe this would pick up passwords for any of these accounts, but sometimes simply the login that you are allowed, the login name that you are required to use before you enter your password is something like a Social Security number.
Okay. So. Representative Coghill?
That's kind of where I was going, and the question was, would it in fact be whatever identifier, either a bank or any other account, for example, the MySpace, I think having access to those, but would it be that the IP address is enough to chase those things? And I guess for those who do those things, because it seems to me like they're able to follow what that computer does from the IP address, so I guess the answer would be kind of dependent upon that for me, because I like the idea of being able to have the IP address as one of the identifiers. But then what value is that? And that's what I'm looking at.
Representative Book?
Thank you. I was just passed a note, and these are considered business accounts, and the drafters do not believe that they include the login IDs. So,
unfortunately, it's often... The drafters it's so imprecise that there are unintended consequences, and as you have the opportunity to come before the Judiciary Committee for ensuing bills, Representative Book, you'll learn that we're quite thorough in our vetting of bills in this committee, and we consider many points of view, and so we're merely going through that vetting process. But thank you for your assistance, Representative Dahlstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'm sure everyone on the committee remembers 2 weeks ago when Special Agent
Waters
and Sergeant Tiddler were here testifying, and one of the things, this topic came up, and they talked about the fact that they had witnessed crimes for several years on the internet, and the companies are not required to keep a log. So even though they knew the crime was occurring in real time, and they knew the company that had the internet address, because that log, they couldn't get an address. So I'm thinking that just having that IP address isn't going to give the information that they might potentially need. And I think that's something we have to change federally.
Representative Cargill?
I'm going to ask a question then. So the chat rooms then are the place where you want to have a login trace, is what you're saying. It's not the IP address, but when you log into a particular area of the internet. And I don't know who that question is to, but
I would say Sergeant Tiddler, because of the capacities. And Sergeant Tiddler?
Yes. I'm sorry. Could you rephrase the question again?
Representative Cargill?
There's two questions here. One of them is, what is the value of including the IP address in here? And then other identifiers, we're talking about logging into places like chat rooms, MySpace, various different places, requiring those identifiers. And we just have here, or identifier, a new address or identifier.
We're just working on language.
I think we're going to struggle with what does that really mean. And so I'm looking for the value of an IP address and these other login accounts. How do we either mandate, because I don't know that an individual who's required to report is going to be able to know all those things.
The best way I would think would be to put a definition of what is a required online identifier. And I've done some research myself on this. Out in Arizona, that's kind of on the forefront because they have an investigator down there with Phoenix PD. He has a definition which it states it means any electronic email address, instant message, chat, social networking, or other similar internet communication name. But then he puts down it does not include social security numbers, dates of birth, or PIN numbers. I think language like that might make people more comfortable with this. I could be wrong here, but I think that's what you're going to be needing as a definition.
Yeah, because those are in the direct. Thank you, Madam Chair. Because those are in the direct control, or at least a knowledge of the person who is making these accounts. For example, I know I have an IP address, but I don't know what it is. And but I do know if I'm signed up, like on my email accounts, I know that I have a GCI email account and I have to log into it. So those kind of things I understand.
So. Yes, sir. And the IP address is actually what you is what the internet service provider gives you as their number, and it shows up and it's registered to usually a specific computer and a specific subscriber on that.
And I would just add a comment, and that is that if you call the help desk of whatever your internet provider is, if you can be patient enough to wait for a person to come online, they will give you that information in about 60 seconds. I've had to do that for other registration type purposes.
And I'm actually, Madam Chair, I'm not against that. I'm just saying there are things that if whatever they're in control of, and they are certainly in control of the IP address, but it's not that easy to know what that is, whereas it is easier to know these different login accounts.
Mm-hmm. All right. Are there...
Madam Chair, if I might, on that point.
Representative Book.
Could I bring up Annie Carpinetti and speak to that issue?
We would be happy to have Annie come and join us at the table. And then we also have online Mr. David Schrade to from DPS to talk about the registry too. So, but Annie, welcome. If you'd identify yourself.
Annie Carpinetti from the Criminal Division of the Department of Law. I did not draft this bill, but it was my understanding that talking to the drafters that they did not intend to include PIN numbers to get into a business, you know, when you do your online banking. And it would help if when we litigate, I have represented the state dealing with legislative intent, and for you to say that on the record does help help us when we're trying to persuade a judge that you did not mean that. So that's my understanding, too, that they did not intend to include login IDs for... In a sense, it's kind of a communication because you're communicating with your bank, but you're not communicating with the world in general. So I think there's that was the distinction.
Thank you, Representative Cocchio.
Annie, on the bill, page 3, line 4 and 5, this is where we're going to talk about the requirements of the electronic mail address, instant message, and then it says internet communication identifier. That sounds like a singular issue, but really it sounds to me like we've been talking about plural internet communication identifiers. So question number one, should we do that? Should we make it plural? And should we then make a definition for internet communication identifier, or should we further describe that to kind of get the intent as what the, I think it was one of the detectives online said.
Through the chair, I think when drafters write bills, they use the singular, but it includes the plural.
Okay.
So I don't think making that plural would matter because it says each in the first. So you understand that, and I know a lot of people have many electronic mail addresses and instant messaging addresses. I think that would capture it with that language.
All right. You got me there.
May I ask a question, Annie?
Sure.
And Representative Coghill has taught me to be careful about how you statutes and laws. How you want statutory language to be clean. I don't know how YouTube or Facebook or any of those things work, because I don't have a membership on them. So I guess it makes me feel a generation older, which is not good. But why do sex offenders have to have access to those in the first place? Why can't we statutorily prohibit sex offenders from being able to access those places altogether in a manner, you know, statutorily that's clean, that respects their constitutional rights? But why can't we just exclude that in the same way that we would exclude a school zone? Can we respect their constitutional rights, but just, you can't, I mean, if you're a sex offender, don't we have rules about going in school zones? Once they're off the sex offender registry. You understand the point they're making is while they are on the registry, can we just exclude them? In addition to all these internet communication identifiers, it would just be easier if they simply didn't have access to Facebook, YouTube, and places where predators go. How would we go about that? Is that possible, or am I trampling on their remaining rights?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I think there would be concerns about First Amendment rights. Certainly a sex offender who's on the registry doesn't have the same breadth of First Amendment rights that other people have, so it would take some, just the constitutionality would take some thinking and looking at. I think the other concern is the practicality of enforcing it, and maybe the police, Officer Tidler could help on that, because computers are so much available in public libraries and various places that I think it would be very, very difficult to enforce. So I think the practical response is to allow, for example, in this bill, allow parents to monitor their children and get information about whether this person is I think that's a very just a practical approach.
Okay, let me ask the question another way. You have a registered sex offender. They follow the rules. They identify their electronic address. They identify their internet communication identifier, and then as soon as they've done that, then they can go on YouTube and Facebook, and chat it up with children, but because they've followed the rules. Do I understand that correctly?
Well, Mr. Chairman, there are statutes that prohibit online enticement of minors, so mm-hmm. so they can't violate other laws when they do that. And when they do, they risk being caught by police officers who are investigating them for committing these crimes. If they follow the rules and they use these addresses, they can communicate with children, but they can't.
But YouTube isn't. I'm sorry, but YouTube isn't necessarily communicating with others. YouTube or some of these sites are just perusing, just access to. Do you see?
I'm the wrong person to ask about YouTube. I would ask somebody a couple generations younger than me.
Maybe we could ask Sergeant Tidler that question. Sergeant Tidler, you understand the gist of what I'm asking is somebody follows the rules and then we are giving them some degree of access to precisely what we're otherwise trying to prohibit them from?
Yes, Representative. It is an identified problem statistically that the offenders out there that are on the internet contacting the children, I think the ones that are, I think the statistics by Flint Waters was 40% to 80% of the people that are trafficking in these images have had bad contact with children. And in the perfect world, I would say yes, prohibit their use of the internet. I don't think we're there yet, though. It's a matter that we have been discussing. We have monthly Internet Crimes Against Children for the task force meetings, and in talking with probations, that's one of the avenues that they are looking at as well, just requiring these people not to have Internet access and to report any computers that they do have. And it's going as far as we're exploring the possibility of just telling them they're not even allowed to have computers, regardless of whether or not they have internet access or not, because in recent cases that we've investigated where they've put a sex offender on probation saying you can have a computer to do your household chores, but you can't have internet access. In the one case I can think of, it took us 9 months to prove that he was accessing the internet and actually still trafficking in child pornography images. Hopefully that answers your question.
So, Sergeant Tiddler, so are you saying that for law enforcement it's too great of a burden to try and push the needle and be more restrictive?
My belief, it would be great if we could. I don't know, as far as enforcement possibilities, any law out there, you're going to have enforcement problems. That being said, you put the burden on the offender, letting them know that, hey, you are breaking the law if you do this, and you hope to gain compliance by just the fact that the law is out there, and then when you do find the violations, you prosecute.
Are there other questions for any of our folks? Representative Cocco?
Mr. Chairman, I'm still stuck on the identifier because we talk about address, and then we put in identifier. And it gets very difficult for me because I guess and maybe this would be for Department of Public Safety, would it be in the anticipation that they would have fluid regulations to keep track of whatever identifiers are locations that are similar to addresses or whatever these are, because I still am unclear what they are. And so passing a law out of saying and identifiers, and I'm really unclear what that is.
Through the chair, Representative Coghill, Kathy Monfreda is also on the line, and there is fairly broad regulatory power to the Department of Public Safety under the sex offender registration statutes, and so she might be able to help you on that, on whether or not, I mean, I would imagine that they could define it in regulation, but she's there to tell you.
And Mr. Chairman, once again, and maybe to Ms. Monfreda, see, to me, an IP address is an identifier, and then the things that you do on the internet, the where you go issues, I don't know that those are identifiers, but they certainly aren't addresses. They're addresses you go to, I suppose. But anyway, so maybe she can help clear that up in my mind.
And Kathy, and I'll augment Representative Coghill's question by asking about the YouTube, Facebook, and all of those entities that we're giving access to sex offenders to peruse after they've satisfactorily signed up for the state's system.
This is Kathy Monfreda. Can you hear me?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. I didn't hear them unmute me. The IP address is not necessarily a bad idea, I don't think, but as an example, a mother trying to check to see if her son is chatting with a registered sex offender isn't going to know the IP address of the person that's communicating with them. They'll know the identifier. As far as what an identifier is, I agree that it's difficult to interpret from the wording now. However, it's also difficult. I think it was brought up earlier in testimony that given technology that changes so quickly, we don't know what to predict in the future for what might be an identifier. Anything that could be presented to the viewer that will help law enforcement track that person down is what I think the goal is.
Okay. Representative Coghill, and then I have a question for you, Kathy.
So I think I'm getting it. What we're looking for is, on one hand, we're looking for addresses because that identifies where you are and who you are. And the other identifiers would be like if you had an image or some kind of a monogram or something like that that would be easily identified with that individual. Is that kind of what I'm looking for?
Through the chair, Representative Coghill, I think possibly I'm also about not particularly up on how MySpace and YouTube and all those work. My kids are, but anything that would identify that person that would be coming across the screen that somebody viewing their communications would have to be able to check and see if that's a registered sex offender.
Okay, so Kathy, I'm going to leave you with a question. We're going to hold this bill over with the intention of moving it from committee without question, but what I'm hearing is this generational gap as to how the sites where there's the most predation going on, nobody seems to understand very well how they work. And the way that I'm reading this bill is that as long as John Doe does everything that the state says, John Doe then has the opportunity to go peruse these sites and to participate in predation that we might not otherwise allow. And what I'm wondering is if you get, I don't know how an identifier works for Facebook or YouTube or how you register, one moment, but I question whether that person could be required to register themselves through the state as a sex offender as you go on to that site so that there is, so that, and Representative Fairclough is nodding her head, so maybe I'm starting to make it more clear, but if John Doe goes on YouTube or Facebook and he's met all the state's requirements, the person that may be talking to or seeing them doesn't know that this person is SO, you know, a sex offender or something. And I'm interested in exploring whether we can have a sex offender requirement for somebody who has an internet communication identifier, because I see that as being somebody who's got a handle, I think is the right vernacular, is that you have a handle. And I'd like to see what we can do to better protect Alaskans that are, because when we heard from Agent Waters, they talked about that the internet is the new school ground, whereas you used to have predators that would hang out outside of McDonald's or outside of a school ground, and now those predators are hanging out on the internet looking for folks, and I wouldn't mind to be able to identify them. And I also am not clear on what internet communication identifier is, but if it's a handle, then I wonder if we can't require that the sex offender indicate through their handle that they're a sex offender. Representative Book?
I can't speak in that language, but I do have somebody here who can. I would like to introduce my staff, if I could just bring up Elizabeth Outen.
Okay.
I think she can address that issue.
Representative Ramos, I'm Elizabeth Outen. I'm staff to Representative Bob Boot. The way that an internet communication identifier under the intent of this bill works is that for a MySpace page or for a Facebook page, you sign up and you create exactly what you said, a handle. And using those handles, you can communicate with a multitude of people online. You can make friends and choose pictures and do all kinds of things online. So the intent is for a parent or a police officer to be able to use those handles that they see online to identify sex offenders, so that if they view their child, for example, talking to a specific handle online, they can check on this online system and make sure that their kid isn't talking to a sex offender.
Thank you, Elizabeth. But the gap here is that puts the burden on the parent, and I want to put the onus on the sex offender, and that's what I'm interested in. It makes it a stronger bill to me, and I don't know whether it's legal or doable, but I'd like to not during the committee's valuable time, but I'd like for you to explore whether this can be a proactive piece of legislation or a reactive piece of legislation. So far, in the manner that it has been described to me, other than the sex offender registering, which is a proactive event, everything that I've heard from law enforcement and from Ms. Monfrida is that the rest of it is rather reactive in nature. And I'm interested in a proactive element where somebody who's perusing these sites has to disclose that they're a sex offender. And I don't know whether it's possible. I don't understand how that works. But I do understand from Agent Waters that that's where these people are shopping, is on these sites.
Can I conclude before I get out of your hair?
Sure.
I think what you have is a great idea. It is not within the scope of this bill. And what we are trying to do here is give the police a tool and give parents a tool so they can protect their children. That's what we're trying to address here. And I understand that this needs some work, and I really appreciate the heartfelt and the consideration given to the committee. And with that, we would like to withdraw and take it into consideration.
Thank you. We appreciate your kind words. The hope of this committee is that you would contemplate a methodology for putting that enforcement element into this bill, because it would be appropriate if it's a possible fit. And we would like for you to go about that with some haste, because we'd like to have you back before the committee and move this bill onto the floor or its next committee in short order. So I would hope that you could come back and see us tomorrow next week, as a bill previously heard. We're very interested in the bill. We just think that it could be strengthened to enjoy a proactive element, and we'd like to task you with that effort. Representative Cockhill?
I understand what you're saying, but just for something for him to contemplate in pondering this, in the sex offender registry, we're asking who they are and where. We know who they are. Now we want to know where they're at. And now we're starting to know where they're going. So so it does, I think, fit in that scope of where are you, what are you doing? And we do start bumping the limits, probably constitutionality of saying you can't do this and you can't do that. But if they're identified, but the school grounds are places, we don't allow them to reside in children's homes, you know, I mean, we are very clear that there's some things that we don't allow them to do, so you can ponder that. But I'm open to the discussion on a little more clarification on these identifiers, either in a presentation of what are the range of issues, because as you can see, I think we lack some of the knowledge. Not that we necessarily want to broadcast it to the world where places that people hide are, so they can go hide there, but at least a scope of what they are.
I agree. It's a new vista, and I think that Agent Waters really put us on our heels when he made his presentation a couple of weeks ago, and that's certainly what I'm reacting to, and I'm interested in a proactive effort, I think, and would challenge you to do that. I certainly will speak for myself. I would be happy to pass the bill out in its present form. The challenge that I have for you is I think that you could push on those horizons a little bit and make it a better bill that actually gives a warning sign to parents, rather than have to parents have to have a companion of handles that are dangerous people, and to actually have those people have to identify themselves as a sex offender, because we're adults. What if somebody engaged you? You know, you're 25, you're on one of these sites, and you're talking with somebody who you think is a high-functioning adult, and you find out that it's a registered sex offender. It would be nice to know, I think. The internet has become a gatekeeper for predators. Anyway, I would be interested. I don't want to belabor the issue anymore, but you know, Jane Pearson, let us know as soon as you're able to come up with new language, or if it's something that's just not possible, we would be happy to bring the bill back before the committee, address Representative Coghill's concerns about internet communication identifier, and then move the bill on to its next committee. And we would be happy to do it as soon as tomorrow, certainly next week. But we'd like to see if you can strengthen this element of it, and then address the internet communication identifier ambiguity.
We'll get right on it. Thank you, sir.
You're welcome.
Thank you, committee. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
We hope you're satisfied with the process here, Representative.
All I can ask for.
Yes, sir.
And more.
Yes, sir. Great to see you. Representative Fairclough? And Ms. Limoges, will you be accompanying?
You can request.
And the committee would like to identify Ms. Limoges' shoes. Nice shoes. Representative Fairclough, it is a pleasure to have you before the House Judiciary Committee. I saw you nodding your head, and we're all aware of your efforts with STAR before you were a member of the legislature, and I appreciate the moral support from the back of the room on trying to expand the horizons of this internet predator bill that we're considering. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, may I point out how appropriate it is to have this bill coming up right after our last discussion?
Mm-hmm. Right. Representative Fairclough.
Mr. Chairman, first, let me thank you for your previous comments and the committee's interest in being proactive on the issue of child pornography
and sexual predators and holding them accountable. I serve in resources, and just very briefly, what came to mind from my resource perspective was you were talking about predator control. Not aerial wolf hunting, but predator control. So just for understanding perspective, judiciary, I understand you had one, and I was thinking we were hunting down animals also, but from yes. a different perspective. That said, statistics show that child pornography generates approximately $3 billion annually. If you divide that by 365 days, people are spending more than $8.2 million on child pornography every day. The bill, HB 333, is an act relating to reporting of child pornography. And again, it's reactive. It's not proactive. But what it does do is modify Alaska state statute to try to move into the 21st century in the different ways and the different vehicles that perpetrators and viewers of child pornography are using. And so to that end, page one, the entire bill, per se, reflects our best attempt at understanding YouTube and all the different modes of communication and that are used in the world that we know as of today, but by no means does it cover all instances. The meat of the bill came to me from a person who wants to remain anonymous. They are a person who works on computers and have had the unfortunate encounter of seeing child pornography on computers that they were sent to repair. As you all are aware, when someone downloads a large picture to your individual home computer, it takes time to get there if it's downloading. And so what technicians sometimes find are over-jammed machinery, hard drives that are clogged up with images. And so from my understanding, it's fairly easy to identify those systems that are being bogged down, and that over the course of time, that some computer technicians like in the past, have brought forward cases for Anchorage Police Department to look at and computers to look at in identifying these perpetrators, and others have not. And he brought this issue for me, would like the playing field to be leveled a little bit flatter so that he, being a good citizen of the state of Alaska and recognizing and wanting to be proactive in reducing and eliminating child pornography, would like to see his compatriots in the field held to that standard a bit higher. And so, in short, that is what it does. I could go on and on about how society could be helped if we could eradicate child pornography. But in the end, this is just one small step to provide another tool in a box that needs a lot more tools to address this issue.
Representative Fairclough, we have Lieutenant Dial, who's available for questions, and then we have one problem, which is we're lacking a quorum.
I noticed that, Mr. Chairman.
Are there any questions for Lieutenant Dial? Lieutenant Dial, are you with us? Lieutenant Dow?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I am online.
Pleasure to have you. Thank you for joining us. You represent an excellent resource to this committee, and we thank you for finding time to participate with us. Can you...
excuse me.
You're welcome. It's all right. Can you talk about the word shall? Shall immediately report the observation. What kind of a burden does this put on... on somebody if they don't do it?
Mr. Chairman, for the record, my name is Rodney Dial. I'm a lieutenant with Alaska State Troopers based out of Ketchikan. We have shall in other language as well, and for example, leaving the scene of an accident. And generally, it means by the most immediate means available. So if they were in a location and they had access to a telephone, without reasonable delay, they would be expected to get on that phone and notify law enforcement of the discovery and such, Mr. Chairman.
Are there any other questions for Lieutenant Dow?
I guess.
Representative Holmes?
Mr. Dial, I was just wondering, would you find something like this useful?
Through the chair, Representative Holmes, I believe so. I think that there are some folks out there that believe that release of of information like this would present some liability to them or the corporation, and that having something like something in statute that pretty much says that they're required to do it would offer them some protection. So I think it would increase the number of people that would report. I think it would make others feel like they wouldn't have to run it through lawyers and such to release that information to us. So I see it as only a benefit to law enforcement in dealing with this problem.
Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions for Lieutenant Dial?
I do have one.
Representative Grunberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Lieutenant Dial, suppose a person is working for Sears or GCI or somebody like that, a company, and various people are involved in or Costco or somebody processing photos. How are you going to be able to know who of all these people who are processing this film have violated this law?
Through the chair, Representative Grunberg, we might not know that information. We wouldn't really see this as something that we could use to prosecute people, but more as a tool that would allow us to gather more information. And as we said before, a lot of times if we have something in statute that basically says somebody's required to do something and we can present that information to a company, a lot of times it will speed the process. They won't run it by lawyers and such, and we'll be able to gather that information.
May I follow up, please?
Representative Grunberg.
And again, let's suppose it's Costco or some company. Would you prosecute the company? Would you? Who are you looking for?
Through the chair, Representative Grunberg, I suppose if we had a situation where we knew that they knew the information and were refusing to release it to us, we would have to get with Department of Law and determine whether or not we could make a case and use that input to determine who we'd prosecute or attempt to prosecute.
Any more questions, Representative Grunberg?
What constitutes a violation? Is it each picture, each film, or what?
But Mr. Chairman, is that question for me?
It is.
Through the chair, Representative Grunberg, my guess is that would be the knowledge of, so it wouldn't be if there were 7,000 images on a computer, there would be separate violations, but there would be one failure to report. So I would imagine that Department of Law would say that it's linked to one specific incident.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions for Lieutenant Dial?
No.
Anybody else in the room? Representative Dahlstrom? Go ahead, sorry.
I was going to make a motion.
Anybody else in the room to testify on 333? Anybody else online for House Bill 333? All right, with that, we will close public testimony. Representative Holmes?
Mr. Chairman, I just wanted to say that I think given the presentation that was given to this committee and the Senate and given our discussion on the previous bill, that this is a good bill, and I support it.
Okay. Yeah. Yes, with all due haste, Representative, don't get in the way of you got the votes, vote. Representative Fairclough.
Mr. Chairman, I wasn't going to get in the way, but I did want to say where the quote came from for the record that I gave you, because sometimes people ask that what I opened with, those statistics came from a January 2007 KTUU report by Angela Unruh. So it wasn't my numbers. It was something that was reported on. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. With that, the chair entertain a motion. Representative Dahlstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I wish to move House Bill 333-25-LS1027/C with attached physical notes and individual recommendations.
Okay. Without objection, House Bill 333 moves from committee. Representative Fairclough, while we have you before the committee, could you comment on the issue that we brought up before? Because you were nodding in the back of the room, and this notion of identification so that the burden doesn't fall to the parent to search the handles, but in fact the obligation is for the sex offender to divulge the risk that they pose. What are your thoughts on that?
Mr. Chairman, members of the Judiciary Committee, remember this as brainstorming and off the top of my head, so if it's totally ridiculous, so be it. But what I passed or said to my aide was, this is a bill for us, a way to be proactive. And what came to mind was, I'm not sure why we would have the parent do anything. Why aren't we having the sex offenders integrate with the telecommunication world, and that when they applied for anything, that they automatically, their IP addresses and their handles from wherever they went would be tracked for APD or for the law enforcement agency. So with that, I mean that we should talk to, at least in the state of Alaska, GCI and ACS first to see if there's any way that they could just gen up our sex offender list, their names, that registry, so that when anyone came by, we wouldn't necessarily have to identify to even the perpetrator of the crime that it was happening, but we would basically have their IP address of what they were going to go use, and we wouldn't try to monitor them at all. And the first time a violation occurred, they'd pop out on an error report. So if they go to the website, guess what? Whether it's you two or whatever, if we thought there was sexually explicit material or they were contacting a minor, that we could know that, and APD could check it out.
Excellent. Thank you very much for your input. Thank you for bringing House Bill 333 before the committee. All right. With that, it is 2:30, and we are now going to move to House Bill 354. Representative Coghill, and who's going to present? You are, Reneva?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, thank you. Because of other bills that I've been involved in, I am not as intimately aware of all the details in this as I should be, so therefore I'm going to have my Chief of Staff, Reneva Moss, who is much more versed on this than I, present the bill.
Reneva, it's so nice to have you. It's always a privilege to have you come before our committee. You're one of the most knowledgeable people in this building on China issues, and one of the most professional people in this building, arguably more so than the chairman, and I appreciate that about you from time to time when I'm not getting a lecture for being the lesser standard, and I'm happy to put that on the record. It's a pleasure to have you. How are you?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm fine. Mr. Chair. This was brought to us, this legislation was brought to us by the Office of Children's Services and Department of Law, and there's also a portion of this bill that was brought to us by a private family law practice in Fairbanks, and that addresses Section 1 of the bill. They had a client who had just turned 18. He had lived with his mother and his stepfather for 18 years. And he wanted to be adopted by his stepfather, but because there was some conflict in language, there was a provision for notification until he was 19 years old. So Section 1 allows an 18-year-old to be adopted without notice or consent from a parent. And I'm just going to go through the sections, Mr. Chairman.
Okay.
I also have two amendments that I would like the committee to consider. Cleaning up the bill, and those amendments were suggested by Department of Law.
Okay.
Section 2 is the note. This is under notice of petition, investigation, and hearing. This, as it is written, would have inserted a special subsection K, which Department of Law has determined is not needed, because in Section 1, on page 2, line 13, when we amended the person to be 18 instead of 19, we also deleted the language that required the court to dispense with the consent of the parent. We've already done this through statute, so Section 2, we no longer need on page 2, line 29, the underlying language, and on page 3, line 3, we no longer need the dispensing, the court dispensing of consent that is referred to in subsection 7, so we would delete subsection 7.
Are we deleting section 3 also?
We are deleting section 3, yes.
So, Madam Chair, if I may.
Representative Holmes.
So just to be clear, does that mean we're deleting all of section 2 and all of section 3? Or is that what we're doing?
Madam Chair, Representative Holmes, no. We are only deleting on page 2, line 29, the words "except as provided in K of this section at," and then we are
that
inserting.
Is section 2, then take section 2 out.
Well, in the committee substitute, that would take section 2 out, yes.
Okay.
Well, I take that back. It wouldn't, because we're deleting subsection 7 on page 3, line 3.
Right.
So it would stay in with that deletion.
Okay. But then you would delete section 3.
Section 3 is deleted completely.
Okay.
Section 4 is to take care of a situation with hard-to-place children. The way the language is now written in statute, they refer to small monthly sums. And in case there are some cases where a child is adopted at birth and there is no evidence of physical or mental issues and no reason for a subsidy, even a small monthly sum. So what this does is it allows the department to defer a subsidy without having to make even a small payment. It would allow them to make no payments until at some point there is some physical or mental issues with the child. The parents can come back to the department and they can negotiate a subsidy that could not exceed the foster care rates. Section 5 clarifies some language that was added to the statute in House Bill 53. There is a section of law now that says that when requested by the governor, lieutenant governor, legislator, OPA, and other agencies or employees of those departments, they can request information and OCS and the Department of Administration would have to supply certain confidential information. This just clarifies that if a person obtains information under that section of law and they disclose that confidential information, they could be found guilty of a misdemeanor.
Madam Chair. Representative Holmes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Do we know what class of misdemeanor that would be? It simply says a misdemeanor here. Do we know what level?
It's not a Class B misdemeanor.
Representative Gruenberg.
Through the Chair. It's not a Class B misdemeanor because the fine is only $500 and a Class B misdemeanor is a $2,000 fine.
And Madam Chair.
Madam Chair, I was asking which type. I didn't say it was a Class B. I asked what type.
Madam Chair, I have Jan Rutherdale here from Department of Law. She could clarify that.
Okay. That would be great. Welcome, Jan. Come on up and please identify yourself just for the record.
Yes, my name is Jan Rutherdale from the Department of Law, and I appreciate Reneva's confidence. I practice in the civil section, so I don't know my criminal law, but I think that is correct, that I don't think it's a Class A misdemeanor. I think it's Class B.
Representative Coghill and then Gruenberg.
I think what Representative Gruenberg and I have kind of settled on in Title 47, this is almost it's over an infraction, but below a misdemeanor. So it is a misdemeanor in that regard, but it's only up to $500, no more than $500.
It's the same as in Title 28. Because remember in Title 28, they used the term misdemeanor because the fine is only $500, not $2,000. And so they just call it a misdemeanor. This is similar language as in Title 28.
You're welcome. Ms. Rutherdale, did you have any other information that you just received that might clarify anything?
No, just that it's a $500 fine. It doesn't indicate whether it's a Class B or a Class A.
Okay. All righty. Reneva, please move on.
Section 6 and Section 9 both clarify that Child Support Services Division is authorized to establish child support orders administratively, as is the courts. Section 7, we have an amendment to delete this language. We are not going to change subsection A, but we are adding a new subsection B, and this is language from a piece of legislation that Representative Guerra introduced, and it says that nothing in this section can be construed as prohibiting a civil action under common law for negligence or wrongful death if a child is injured or dies while in custody of the state. And that pretty well sums up what the bill does.
Okay, are there any questions from committee members for Ms. Moss?
Madam Chair, just for
Representative Coghill.
Discussion, before we get into the general discussion, if you wouldn't mind, you could go ahead and take the amendments, and that would help us probably round out the discussion on the bill.
All right.
And for whatever testimony you want to get.
Do we have anyone online for testimony? No? And do we have anyone in the room that wishes to testify on this? No? Okay. If you would like to move amendment number
Madam Chair,
one.
Madam Chair, the one that has the 3/308, we get to call amendment number one.
Okay. And if you want to just tell us what that is, and we'll...
Madam Chair, I will move it, but I'll have...
Sorry, Madam Chair, I don't have...
They should be in the packet.
Oh, are they in the packet? Okay,
yes.
Sorry.
Madam Chair, amendment number one goes to page 4, lines 12 through 15. It is unnecessary to say except as in provided in subsection B, so we're reverting back to the original language, which will delete section 7 completely from the CS, and we are adding section B, which clarifies that the state can be held liable for civil action for negligence or wrongful death if a child is injured or dies while they're in state custody.
Okay. Are there any objections to that? All right. Seeing none, amendment number one has passed. Representative Coghill?
Madam Chair, the one that is 3/10/08, we'll call amendment number two. I'll move amendment number two.
All right. And if you would like to explain...
Madam Chair,
to my able staff.
This amendment also deletes language that is unnecessary because in section 1 on page 2, line 13 through 15, we have deleted language that requires the court to dispense with consent of the parent because the child is 18 and does not need the consent of the parent.
All right, thank you. Are there any objections from any of the members of the committee?
Mr. Chair. Madam Chair.
Representative Groenberg.
I'm sorry, I had to take a call from my son. That's why I stepped out for a minute. But I want to go back to the previous amendment. I had a question on that.
I think that's out of line.
Well,
we've already passed it. And
I would ask that you listen to what I have to say before you make that decision.
I would ask that we continue on with amendment number two.
I'll be glad to discuss it with him after we dispense with this, because we do have a motion on the floor.
We have a motion on the floor.
Yes.
So that's why.
I'm sorry.
If we can finish this out of respect to the process, and then we can come back to you.
Oh, that's fair.
Your issue. Okay. So are there any objections to amendment number two? All right. With seeing none, amendment number two has passed. So, Representative Groenberg.
I thought we had passed.
If you would like to ask your question about amendment number one.
Yeah, where we talk about deleting number seven, it seems to me, I could be wrong, I was trying to figure out where this, at least,
Okay.
You're right.
No problem. Well, it's good to have it cleared up.
Cue the music.
Good to have it cleared up here in committee, and then on the floor we're straight. So, all right. So we have amendment number one and two that have passed, and we have no one in the room that wishes to testify, and no one online that wishes to testify, and public testimony has been closed previously. So. How about any comments from any of members of the committee, any discussion that we would like to have here at the table? Representative Groenberg.
My staff had a couple of questions. If I could just have a couple of seconds to ask her.
3 seconds. One, two, three. You're done. A little levity.
Oh, my.
Okay, I don't have a question. Thank you.
All right, thanks so much. Okay.
When you're on a roll, you're on a roll.
We have before us House, the CS for House Bill 354, and I would entertain a motion.
Is it okay to move your own bill, or should I wait for the chairman?
I'll move it. Madam Chair, I move that we move from committee CS for House Bill number 354-25-LS-1414-E with attached fiscal notes and recommendations.
And are there any objections? Seeing none, this bill has passed from committee, and the time is 17 minutes to 3, and we are adjourned.